They're running out there like chickens without their heads, as my mother used to say, poring over, you know, every single sermon that Leo delivers, you know, every word, and then breaking the big news. He's one of them. He's a synodal guy. You know what I mean? It's just, it's cute. Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Matt. This is The Remnant Underground. Before we get started tonight, a little shout out to my 17-year-old daughter, Sophia. Sophia runs the Remnant shop over at shop.remnantnewspaper.com. And for weeks now, the poor child has been patiently reminding me to say something to you, to this audience, about the new inventory that we've been getting over at the Remnant store. So here goes. Some of this inventory is actually Sharp Pilgrimage related, which is fun, because the pilgrimage is now 2 weeks out. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be dedicated to Christ the King and, of course, the Sacred Heart of Jesus, which means we will be marching under the Sacred Heart flag. And as luck would have it, I've got one of those right here for sale over at the Remnant shop. June is coming. It's also the month of the Sacred Heart. Don't forget, that's all it is, month of the Sacred Heart. And the Sacred Heart flag is a great way to decorate your front porch during June, don't you think? Also available, plenty of these are available, these little lapel pins that I wear in every episode of The Remnant. Underground, we have t-shirts, we have the new leather rosary pouches here, which are fantastic. I would just encourage you to check it out. It's at shop.remnantnewspaper.com. Pick up some of that great merch. I said merch. You're supposed to say merch. Right? Merch. And help us keep the lights on down here in the underground. And plus, Sophia will be very grateful for the fact that I have communicated this to you tonight on tonight's show. So, also, tonight, now, I hope just a quick word, although it's an issue that I feel really passionate about, and that is this whole AI thing, which I call anti-human intelligence. For about 12 hours last week, we inadvertently left an AI clip in our program in the underground. I'm so mad about this because it wasn't integral to the show at all. A friend sent it over, a guy who I trust, and he said, "This is really good." I thought he meant what Thomas Sowell had said about Pope Francis was really good. Turns out what he actually meant was, "This is pretty effective AI. Check this out. It looks just like it's Thomas. It sounds just like it's Thomas Sowell speaking." So I felt an obligation to get rid of it immediately when we discovered that it was that we had put it in our video. Because some of you may remember that just a few months ago, I had promised that's exactly what I was going to do. You might remember this. And here's the promise. Here in the Remnant Underground, over at the newspaper, Remnant Newspaper, at our website, remnantnewspaper.com, I promise you I will never surrender to this AI beast. I will not. So in this particular case, this particular iteration of AI, it seems to me that it's part of this whole transhumanist thing. I mean, because they're actually, people out there are taking an older man and they're making it seem as though he's continuing to comment. And why wouldn't he be? With people shooting videos from their homes and their living rooms and their bedrooms, and even when you're retired, because Thomas Sowell is retired, people are still making comments on videos. So it looks like that's what was going on here. He made a comment about the new pope. Isn't that nice, you know? Well, he's a very old man. I think he's 94 years old. He's not making these comments. So what happens when, God forbid, Thomas Sowell, for example, passes away, when he dies? Is he still going to be out there commenting on things? See what I mean? It's like it seems sort of transhumanist in a way. It's messing with humanity. It's messing with reality. And it's going to affect all of us. We're already seeing it with Pope Leo. Fake videos, fake statements, fake graphics are coming out. It's going to get really crazy, right? This is one of the reasons I keep saying, I'm going on the road more than ever before. I can't wait for the Sharp Pilgrimage where I'll be able to smell the grass and see real people, and there will be no AI and no screens, you know, for three glorious days. The CIC, the Catholic Identity Conference, becoming very important. We're bringing four bishops in. We're going to speak to you in real time, as real people. Isn't that going to be nice? I have no doubt that sooner than later, I shouldn't give anybody an idea, but there's going to be like AI persona of Michael Matt, whether I like it or not. It's like Wikipedia. They steal your life. They take your information. They say things about you, and there's nothing you can do to change it. I shared this concern with a good friend who's in this industry, and he knows exactly what's going on. And I said, you know, that's going to happen sooner or later. Mike Matt's going to be down in the underground doing crazy stuff. And I said to my friend, you will be able to tell that it's AI, but most people won't be able to, right? And he kind of looked at me funny, goes, you know, maybe for the next 6 months, I'll be able to tell. After that, I mean, it's advancing so fast now, nobody's going to know. Isn't that nice? Isn't that fun? Welcome to the New World Order. What is truth has gone viral. No one is going to know anything for sure. And this they call progress. And imagine going through COVID 2.0 with this explosion of the AI phenomenon. Imagine the level of deception then. Oh man, we are going to see people blowing up, their heads exploding, falling over in the streets all over the place, and you're not going to know if any of it's true. I think we should really pull back on this, you know, because I see some traditional Catholics out there right now, and I think it's kind of funny to create videos of famous people denouncing Francis or whatever, or Leo, things that these famous people never actually said, and they think it's funny. I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's funny at all. I'm not sure why it's not plagiarism, or at the very least, the worst of yellow journalism that mankind has ever even conceived of. I'm a newspaper guy. I've been running a newspaper all my life. My father's and grandfather's been doing it for 150 years. You can't just take a newspaper and write fake, false things, put fake pictures on there, and just think that it's funny, and if people get it, it's funny. If they don't get it, they're confused. No, we have a responsibility to defend the truth, don't we? So it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry that it happened this one time. I was jet lagging when it did. We should never have used the Thomas Sowell piece, and I apologize for that. It's not going to happen again, not at the Remnant. It's not funny. It's dehumanizing, and it's crazy. And really, honestly, it contributes to the total annihilation of truth in a world already completely dominated by the father of lies. I think this is a moral issue. We have a moral responsibility not to use it, in my opinion. And I know what some people will say, hey man, come on, chill out. AI is just a tool. It's just a tool, can be used for good, can be used for evil. That sounds very sophisticated, doesn't it? But I'm so sick of that argument. I really am. Some of these things are just the Luciferian tools that are transforming all of us into godless, soulless, mindless, heartless subhumans who don't even know what bathroom to use anymore. You know, it's time to tap the brakes. So to hell with AI. Not going to happen again. In fact, I was really pleased to see the new Pope tackle this right out of the gate in a few short remarks that he made to the press, to the media. 6,000 members of the press were there. This was the meeting that 12 years ago, I was at it, and Bergoglio was introduced, Pope Francis was introduced to the media, same 6,000-10,000 people were there. And he said, well, I don't want to give you a blessing because some of you are not Catholic and I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, you know? It's interesting that Pope Leo, in the same exact setting with 6,000 members of the press, he decides not only to bless the press, but to bless them in Latin.
Benedictum. Adiutorium nostrum in nomine Domini. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus.
By the way, kids, Latin is back. Let's Sing with the Pope is a new initiative from the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music, a series of short educational video tutorials on social media to help the people of God sing together with the Holy Father during the main liturgical celebrations. How about that? Now, I don't know what's going to happen with our neo-Catholic friends who've been saying forever, man, you got to get rid of Latin. Nobody knows it. Nobody understands it. What's going on? So Leo, who's obviously not a traditionalist, is something of a linguist. This is fun. And he's pretty serious about this Latin thing. Just this morning, in fact, I received this briefing from the Vatican Press Office. It's basically an invitation visit of the Roman Pontiff, Leo XIV, to the Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore on May 25th. But I'm going to have Walter just put this on the screen. We'll scroll down a bit. Kind of fun. Kind of something we didn't expect to see. Lots of Latin. Once again, beautiful old chant, beautiful motets, part of this visit to St. Mary Major by the Holy Father. So evidently, Pope Leo is serious about this. What does it all mean? I have no idea. We're all trying to find out, but it's sort of a pleasant little zephyr of change, don't you think? A little wind of change. And I know what some people are going to say, and, you know, I just don't fall for it, Michael Matt. You know, he's a Vatican II heretic and all that. That's, come on, we're all adults here, right? You know what, Walter? In fact, let's just lower the lights and let's address this as we close out the show tonight. Sort of just man to woman, me to you. Let's just address this thing because it's getting a little bit out of control, you know? let's just cut to the chase. And I'm going to be blunt, because it's just, it's a series of really strange misunderstandings. It almost seems like the people who are new to the traditional movement, you know, and they're doing really good work. I'm not trying to be critical. Some of these guys out there on YouTube with really wonderful, you know, YouTube channels are a lot younger than I am. They're doing fantastic work. I guess you call them bloggers. I don't know. Whatever. But it's like they're missing something a little bit. They're missing the point of how this whole thing works. This is a revolution. We are in a counter-revolution. It's never a matter of, look at that, the war is over. It's just never, ever going to be that way in our lifetimes. That's just not the way it's going to work, friends. But we're in the church. Here we are. And the question is, how do we effectively, as traditional Catholics, how do we play our cards? You see? It's not a matter of W versus L, wins and loses and losses, and we're going to kick some butt, and we're, you know, going to have this great triumph, we're going to show them. It's never going to be like that. And if you're waiting for that, either way, for the great, you know, complete annihilation of the church or for this beautiful flowering of the new springtime, either way, it's not going to happen. It's just been such a crazy couple of weeks since the conclave. I'm looking on as sort of the seasoned old war horse going, what's going on, kids? Come on. Come on, as it was the first thing I said from on top of the colonnade, in fact, wasn't it? Okay, everybody, calm down, calm down. We've been here before, okay? We've got this. More importantly, he's got this, right? But now I see these younger guys on YouTube, and God bless them. I'm so, because you know what? It wasn't too long ago, it felt like, well, as soon as we die off, there's going to be nobody coming up to, you know, behind us, bringing up the rear in this movement. So I'm thrilled that they're there, don't get me wrong. But they're maybe a little bit over enthusiastic right now. They're running out there like chickens without their heads, as my mother used to say, poring over, you know, every single sermon that Leo delivers, you know, every word, and then breaking the big news. He's one of them. He's a synodal guy. You know what I mean? It's just, it's cute. Yeah, but there's just a sense of kind of missing the big picture. That's why I wanted Walter to dim the lights and just have this little conversation, right? Because we have to be smart, wise as serpents, cooing as doves. What do? Now, we've been here before, as I keep saying. I've been three conclaves. We don't react. If when Cardinal Ratzinger was elected, you don't say, he's a Vatican II guy. We can't stand him. And right away, he gets the message. In the age of social media, this reaches. The Vatican's a very small place. It's a small world. And when we're out here as Americans just running our mouths and six guns shooting like John Wayne at everything that's going on there, they get the message. And there's less and less incentive then for any somewhat conservative-leaning new pope or cardinal or whatever to have any truck with us at all. It's like, especially the American. These American tradies are nuts. What's wrong with them? So we have to make sure that we don't look like we're jubilant and happy that things might be the same as they were under Francis. I happen not to think that they will be. I think this is not Francis 2.0, and I'll explain why a little bit more later in the show. But in a sense, it doesn't even matter. And certainly, we're not saying that this is St. Pius X. So we have to guard against that. Whoo, this is good news. Turns out he's a synodal heretic. Ha, he's a bad guy, so we get to keep our gigs. We get to go on scaring everybody to death every single day. There's no hope. Listen, all ye who enter here must abandon hope, because if we're going to live happily ever after, we have to be hopeless. What is this? I mean, people say that I'm a little bit negative. I'm like Pollyanna compared to these guys. Like, wait a minute. Let's find out what he says. He hasn't bounced all those bishops yet. Somebody got rid of a Latin mass the other day, and Leo didn't stop it. I'm like, he has been pope for 5 minutes. Let's just wait and see. And so I really struggle as an old newspaper guy. I really struggle to figure out, trying to get my mind around AI, trying to get my mind around the blogosphere, what the point of this. I don't know when these guys sleep. I mean, putting videos out like every 10 minutes. God love them. But I still don't quite understand what the point of it is. The frantic attempt to do that. And again, I've been literally at this all my life. And I would ask them, you know, once you convince your audience that there's no hope and that you were the very first guy on the internet to find out how terrible this new pope is, well, then what? What are we supposed to do with your hot information? Where do we go from here? Right? What's happened? This isn't American politics. This isn't like you get to try to run somebody else in 4 years to see if he can do a better job. This is the Pope. It's a Catholic Church. It's 60, 70 years after Vatican II. It's 100 years, 200 years after the Masonic Revolution. No, 250 years. It's a long time of revolution in the church. It's going to take a while, and we have to pick our battles. We have to be smart. And if you, there's little things that you can do, and I've done this over the years. I mean, I guess when I was a kid, I probably flew off half-cocked too all the time, you know, about what was happening. And I realized that there's a lot more good in the world, that people are diabolically disoriented. You spend some time in the Vatican, you get to know all these people a little bit, like, hey, you know what? They're not the devil incarnate. I was thinking that about the Stampa, the Vatican press office. These are the nicest guys. They're not like ideologically driven to convince the entire world to go to hell and abandon the Catholic faith. They're just doing their job, you know? They've always been very fair to people like us, the remnant, when we go over to cover things. Especially now, 60 years after Vatican II. They were all kids when it happened. They just grew up in the Church of Vatican II. And so we as traditional Catholics, I think, have an obligation to sort of take them by the hand and patiently sort of lead them towards the light, lead them back to tradition, have good conversations with them, right? Show a softer, gentler side of the traditional Catholic counter-revolution, right? Because if you look at the folks on the left and you look at how they're reacting, because they're reacting the same as some of our younger traditionalists, but they're reacting in the other direction. They're freaking out. They're freaking out over Pope Leo. He's a devil incarnate, according to them. Because once again, just like they did with Ratzinger, when the New York Times called him God's Rottweiler and was claiming that Cardinal Ratzinger was like an uber-traditional Catholic, well, of course he wasn't. But there was no reason for us to disabuse the New York Times of thinking that he was, so we played along with it. The left is doing the same thing with Leo right now. He's an uber-traditionalist. Oh, my gosh. So here are, for example, a little meltdown from the ladies on The View.
I'm a little concerned about this choice for the LGBTQ plus community. In 2012, he gave an address to bishops, and he lamented the popular culture fostered and sympathy for beliefs and practices that are at odds with the gospel, and that's a quote. And then he cited the homosexual lifestyle and alternative families comprised of same-sex partners and their adopted children. I think that Pope Francis certainly made great changes in terms of embracing the LGBTQ plus community and extending blessings to the community. And I hope that this is that this Pope doesn't roll back.
Oh, poor little baby. Well, I hope you get over it. That's so sad. But I would remind everybody of what was going on with the ladies of The View during the last pontificate.
Went to see Pope Francis.
Yes.
And that was kind of interesting.
That's amazing. That's so amazing.
Like, holy moly, for real.
He was quite amazing. He is exactly what I hoped he would be, which is a pope for all people, regardless of religion. And I wanted to thank him for all of my gay friends. Yeah. And for all of my divorce friends, because he basically has said, listen, God loves you no matter what, come back to the church. Yeah. I went to Catholic school, and the first pope I ever knew about was called John the 23rd.
Mm-hmm. The good
and
pope.
He was instrumental in saying to the powers that be, listen, we cannot continue to do these masses in Latin, because not everybody speaks Latin. Thank you for everything.
You are very important.
No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be mean, but I'm so glad that that's over. I really am. God rest his soul. I'm so glad that's over. You know, and I do think the new guy is not going to be doing quite that level, that degree of silly stupid. I really do. I think we're going to see a little change there. And that's a good thing. It's a positive thing. You know, and there are reasons for hope. We've talked about it. Now, this isn't like, oh, man, you know, we got to just wait and see and hope for the best. No, I'm talking about hope based on something real, right? And even humanly speaking, at this point, there is reason for some, at least some interesting questioning to go on right now. A little bit of reason for hope. Because I will tell you this, from having spent a couple of weeks over there now and having covered the conclave, something seems to have happened at the conclave. Something happened. I'll give you an example of what I base that on. Well, there's a lot of scuttlebutt, but I personally base it on things like Gerhard Cardinal Muller, who we all respect very much. He's a good friend. spoken at the CIC. I've interviewed him. But I wouldn't say that Cardinal Mueller is a Latin Mass guy. Now, he said the Latin Mass at Chartres last year, so he's with us, he stands with us, he's sympathetic. But he's not like, oh, we have to get rid of the new Mass and have the traditional Latin Mass exclusively. No, he's another son of Vatican II, as I said. He wants Vatican II to be interpreted in the light of tradition and so forth. But something happened, because right after the conclave, Cardinal Mueller comes out, and he doesn't tell me, he doesn't whisper it over dinner somewhere. He tells the AP, the Associated Press, Nicole Winfield, for heaven's sakes, that Pope Leo's first step as Pope should be to restore the old Latin Mass. Let that sink in. Again, he's not a Latin Mass guy, Cardinal Mueller. But the first step for Leo is to restore the Latin Mass, according to Cardinal Mueller? What does that sound like to you? Because to me, it sounds like a quid quo pro. And he's not the only one. There's been a lot of talk about the Latin Mass all of a sudden. A number of cardinals have come out there talking about the Latin Mass. Fresh out of the conclave, for example, we have this, quote, "We already have different rites, such as the Syro-Malabar rite." This is Cardinal Archbishop of Singapore. He said this to La Bussola. He says, "We can very well accept different ways of celebrating the Eucharist, and I believe we should not suffocate those who prefer the Tridentine rite." Again, this was a member of the Sacred College of Cardinals just days after the conclave saying, I think Leo's going to be fair on some of this stuff, and I think he should be. I think the Latin Mass should be free, should be liberated. And guess who agrees with him? Archbishop Corleone. He says, "Let me second the idea that lifting the restrictions on the 1962 Missal would be grand, healing, and unifying." You see? So a lot of things are happening here. I mean, all these bishops, Bishop Schneider and Cardinal Burke and Cardinal Mueller and now Cardinal Goh and Archbishop Corleone, they're all moving in a very obvious traditional direction, right? So it's not unthinkable at all to think that it could be happening all the way to the top. And it certainly is not difficult to think that he has gotten the message, that Pope Leo has gotten the message from these cardinals who were saying, hey, we need to do something about this gaping gash, this gaping head wound in the church called Traditionis Custodis. It's completely avoidable. Just get rid of it. Let's stop. Let's bring the Latin Mass back and just go on. And Leo would be just the man to do it, since obviously he really believes in the other rites of the church and supporting the other rites inside the Catholic Church as valuable and rich, okay? So I think Cardinal Goh's statement was very interesting. He's another prince of the church, by the way, who seems like he's pretty much had enough of what happened over the past 12 years.
On the other hand, those who try to be faithful to the gospel themselves are confused. Mm-hmm. Even bishops are confused, including cardinals. We are confused as to exactly what is the church teaching with respect to certain moral issues? And I don't ever believe that we should reduce the gospel to suit the world. The gospel is the way, the truth, and the life.
Right.
What we should do is try to communicate the gospel to the world in such a way that they see the truth of what we are saying, the rationale of what we are saying, and that they will be brought over. But at the same time, if they have difficulties, we will journey with them. And this is where the synodal process is important. But it does not mean to say we should compromise our teaching so that the world will find it more acceptable. Mm-hmm. If that is the case, I think we are deceiving the world.
Right.
So those are the men who were talking to Cardinal Prevost during the conclave. They were having dinner together, these guys, right? In the run-up to the conclave. So are you absolutely positive that despite his synodality, despite his little appointments, most of which were already in the pipeline so far, we have to wait and see who he makes Secretary of State before we make a whole lot out of these appointments, right? The big ones are the ones right there in Rome, in the Vatican. But are we absolutely sure that Cardinal Prevost wants to prolong that reign of confusion that Cardinal Goh was just talking about? Or does he have something else in mind? What if there was a quid quo pro? What if the conservatives actually made some sort of a deal, which is more than just likely, I think it's probable, given how outnumbered they were, is they made some sort of a deal. And one of the conditions for that deal was voting for a cardinal who was going to roll back Traditionis Custodis and lift the restrictions on the Latin Mass. What if that happened? Because that's key. There are a lot of people who not even Latin Mass goers, they understand that Latin Mass goes back to the heart of the church. It changes everything. It changed history the last time around. So even if you don't go to the Latin Mass, this is a massive, massive thing. How you pray is how you believe. Put that back in the heart of the church. Watch it grow. Watch it change everything, even if you don't have access to it. You see? So if that happened, if there was a quid quo pro with Leo, an American who understands social media very well, so he's watching. What if he's watching right now? What if he looks out over the stratosphere and he sees some of us behaving like zombies in Night of the Living Dead, you know? Leo is evil. Leo is a heretic. Leo is a Freemason. I mean, what if he sees that? What if that's the face of tradition? That his brother cardinals were saying, you need to be good to these people. These are good people. You gotta do something for them, right? They're in the heart of the church, you know? And he sees a pack of zombies are screaming and yelling and doing this at him, you know, and saying that anybody who doesn't go to the Latin Mass is a heretic outside the church. Well, why in the world would the Pope even think about trying to accommodate us, you see? So I would say, in all due respect, can we just cool it? Can we just cool it for a few months? Can we just take a breath? There's no hurry. If he is the devil incarnate, if he is Francis 2.0, the whole world's going to see it. All of our viewers, you will see it. Everybody will see it. We'll know. But wouldn't it be smart and fun and interesting and strategic to just wait a little bit? There's plenty of time for us to initiate Operation Lambast Leo, you know? If Leo comes out and with, you know, Traditionis Custodis 2.0 or whatever, you know? But for now, let's just take a break. Let's just breathe. Again, it worked with Cardinal Ratzinger. Let's see if it might work with Cardinal Prevost, right? We really seriously have nothing to lose, friends. And that's all we've been doing. We're not trying to look at this with rose-colored glasses. We know where we stand. 60 years after Vatican II, where do you think you're going to find these, you know, some lion churchman who's going to come out there like a Cardinal Ottaviani and start knocking heads together and restore everything that we want restored? No, it's going to take time, a lot of time, right? You know, again, I've been down here in these trenches all of my life. And I'm honestly not fretting over what the new Pope is going to do tomorrow, what he's going to do tomorrow, what he's going to do the next day, what he's going to do wrong, or the next day after that, right? I stand by what I said, in fact, on the very first day that he was elected. But I just want to say, like, I'm not really interested in just going all negative and dark now. When Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger was elected Pope, I remember very clearly a lot of traditional Catholics saying, haven't you seen this guy is a modernist? He was a Paratus at Vatican II. He's the worst of the worst. It's awful, you know. And everybody panics, you know. He couldn't be any worse than Ratzinger in the tie with Rahner back in the day at Vatican II. So we had this with Cardinal Ratzinger when he became Benedict XVI, changed history. I mean, think about the guy from Vatican II. Couldn't have been any worse, right? He was just the worst. Brings back the Latin Mass, frees the Latin Mass completely, lifts the excommunications of the Pius X bishops. Whoever saw that coming? Nobody. Absolutely nobody. And this night, conclave night, I remember so clearly being told by a lot of traditional Catholics that it couldn't be any worse than Joseph Ratzinger. Well, history has shown that was absolutely not true, even though he wasn't a traditional Catholic. Again, I mean, I stand by that. I take nothing back, nothing at all. Why? Because I've been here before, been here for a long time. And at the risk of sounding arrogant, I simply know how it works. The new Pope is what he is. And so far, that's a bit of a mixed bag, some good, some bad. Yes, some goofy appointments. Yes, synodality, right? It's a mixed bag. Again, 60 years after Vatican II, what did you expect? You know, what'd you expect? As I keep saying, we're all diabolically disoriented, but we have to try to put some influence and some pressure on this pontificate right out of the gate. Don't spoil it, right? Not right away. And the thing is, we can afford to do this because no matter what happens, we've been behind these enemy lines all of our lives. And our job remains the same no matter what. We win this war, and I hope you can hear this, because this is, to me, it's so patently obvious, but maybe it's only obvious if you've been at it for a long time, as long as I have. We win this war by keeping hope alive. That's it. That's how easy it is. If we can keep hope alive, we win, because this is a battle between good and evil. This is not politics. Hope is everything, right? If we keep hope alive, then our children will have hope, and they will grow up in the old faith no matter what, and they will outlive the long revolution. And that's the game here. Not the temporary occupants of Peter's chair. That's not first and foremost the thing. The thing is the counter-revolution, the restoration, the keeping of the old faith. And that's a long haul. It'll take a long time. And you have to think like that. You have to train yourself to think like they do, right? Freemasonry, for example, was very successful in undermining the Catholic Church since, what, 1717, long time ago. Do you know why they were so successful? It's because Freemasons think in centuries, not years. Centuries, not years. They think in terms of the long revolution. They knew that if they were going to be successful in replacing the old order of Christ with a new order of man, that they needed to be willing to fight a war whose victory they would not necessarily live to see. Right? They had to be cunning. They had to be smart. They had to know when to shut their mouths, when to communicate with secret handshakes and all that silliness. Well, that's what they were doing, because they were thinking long, long term. So if we want to be effective counter-revolutionary soldiers of Jesus Christ, we have to prepare to fight a long war, a war whose victory we will not see, most likely. We're not going to see it either. Please God, maybe we will. Maybe my sons will, or my grandsons. I don't know. But I don't plan on seeing it. But I stay here and I fight. I stay on this battlefield and I fight. And I look for any single scrap, ounce, half an acre, half a hectare of Catholic ground to take. And I take it. And we've been doing that successfully all my life. As I keep saying, remember where we were back in the 1970s. We had nothing. Now you got Cardinal Mueller telling Nicole Winfield of the AP that what we need to do is restore the Latin Mass. You know what that is? That's a failed revolution. They failed. They failed. The Latin Mass is still front and center. And that, by Latin Mass, I mean as touchstone of the old faith. Front and center of this counter-revolution. Praise be to God. So don't tell me we haven't made any progress. We've made lots of progress. And we have to be content to just win a few battles, not all of them, just a few. We have to be content to get up and lose a lot more, lose battles. It's not many, how many times you lose the battle, it's how many times you get back up, and you go back out there, and you never quit, and you never surrender, right? You stay out in the hills, you stay out in the jungles, you stay out in the swamps, you stay out in the forest for as long as it takes. You never come in. You never surrender. That's the mentality of an effective crusader, Cristero, Vandean, Catholic counter-revolution. You stay out in the woods and the swamps of the Vendée for as long as it takes. And if all you take with you to eternity is hope and faith, when they kill you, you won. That's what it means to be part of the remnant. That's what this is all about, the remnant. That little ragtag federation of warring clans, what's left over, the little thing that remains of the mighty Christendom, the mighty armies of Christendom, that's us. You know, the Vendeans, they were a remnant of the army of France, right? Of the great army, the great grand Catholic army of the Vendeans. They couldn't even afford uniforms necessarily. They used the rosary and a sacred heart, right? Because they were a little ragtag remnant put together to fight. Guerrilla fighters who saw a victory every day. You know where their victory was? It's the same as ours. The Vendeans saw victory every single day, and their own refusal to surrender or to ever become them. That's where the victory was. They didn't expect to take back Paris. They expected to never become the enemy, to keep the old faith, and to keep hope alive. We just won a battle, friends. Think about it. Congratulate yourselves. Talk about it at dinner tonight. Pray about it. Thank God. We just won a big one, a big battle. Think about this. For 12 years, us, this little ragtag group of clans from around the world, went up against the raw power of elite globalist trained troops with all the power in the world, the power of deception, of propaganda, of actually shutting the world down. We went up against them and we won. We're still here. We were outnumbered. We were outgunned. They tried to mask us up. They tried to inject us. They tried to take away our children. They took away our sacraments. They shut down our churches. And guess what happened? They discovered that they cannot bully sincere, faithful Catholics into losing hope. We won. And that's all that matters. Hope is all that matters. And yes, I get really impatient when I see people who seem to enjoy going online and dashing people's hopes to hell, because that's what it is. Hell, hell, that's where you go. That's where you go when you abandon all hope. Hell. Hope is everything. Everything they do is about killing hope inside of us, which means that everything we do is about keeping hope alive inside of us, inside of our children and our friends, right? If you felt, as I did, even the faintest ray of hope when our new pope was announced on the loggia, even the faintest, maybe, I hope, you know what? If you felt that, that means they didn't get you. That means you won that round. You kept the faith despite 12 years of holy hell in the Catholic Church. You're still here. You're not one of them. You're a Christian practicing the theological virtue of hope. This isn't politics. This is a religious war. It's a holy war. And you have to have hope to fight this war. You have to keep hope alive, because if hope dies, we die, and the war is lost. I want you to trust me, friends. I have the great benefit of having known the pioneers of this movement, the fighters, the Lefebvres, the Davies, the Walter Mess, the Bill Maris, all these people back in the day, before there was any sign that there was actually going to be the hope that we have now in Latin masses all over the world, right? I've seen them. I knew them. I walked with them. I fought with them. I learned from them. I sat at their feet. I can tell you, I've seen it all before. We know what to do. We were taught what to do, not only by these pioneers of the traditional Catholic movement, but by the early pioneers, the Vandeans, the Cristeros. We know what to do. So what are we doing now that Leo has become the Pope? What are we doing? Are we like having a victory parade? Are we being silly? Oh, this is great. It's all perfect. Just wait and see. I think it's going to be good. No. Are we condemning him to the deepest bowels of hell because he's not one of us? No. We're just standing here. We're still just standing here. On the front line of the only battlefield that matters, the battle for the old faith, we're just waiting to see what's next. Making the best of whatever they throw at us. If it's good, we'll take it. If it's not, we'll fight it. And we're doing okay. We're still together. It's the big things that matter, friends. It's the Mass that matters. Keeping hope alive matters. Uniting the clans matters. Staying together. God matters, faith matters, our children matter. So if what we can expect now from the Vatican is a lot of sermonizing about climate change and synodality and the spirit of Vatican II, you know what? Who cares? We've seen it before. It barely got out the gates. It barely got off the ground. Ultimately, it's going to crash and burn. You know what I mean? Who cares about those things? What matters is the faith, the Mass, a climate change and synodality, you know, obviously. To hell with all that. No, I mean that quite literally. To hell with all of it. Just keep on praying, friends. Keep hope alive. Keep on smiling. Keep on laughing. Keep on fighting, right? Don't lose hope. We're gonna be all right. God's got this. All right, thanks for sitting through my little pep talk from the old guy. God bless you all. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.